Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Like the show, then tell a friend. Kresh and Keith on WEEI.
Julio, have the guts to pick up the phone.
What's happening?
Yeah.
All right.
Julio.
Can you hear me?
I got you. This is your favorite uncle. You want to go to the Cowboys, Julio? Or you want to stay in Atlanta?
Oh, man. No, I'm out of there, man.
Ideally, where would you like to go?
Right now, I want to win.
Okay. We don't go to Dallas.
Oh, yeah. No. I ain't going to Dallas, man. I never thought about going to Dallas.
That's what it sounded like with Julio Jones jumping on with his uncle, Shannon Sharp. Now we hear from Diana Rossini and maybe one other that... hold on.
It's gotten worse than here with the headphones. You know, he just chucked him. He just chucked him across
right
the room.
Right before the break, he looked like Cyclops with it across his eyes.
That might be Monka TOS of the Twitch, by the way.
If you go to Twitter, right? If you go to the Twitter right now, Eamon just tweeted out, I retweeted it, a bunch of retweets on there of our potentially our new show logo. If you remember the famous Scott Van Pelt logo, which is just like the glasses and the headphones, we have a new twist on it. And this is what Gresh's headphones have looked like for the first hour.
I had
of the
to
program.
Chuck them or else I would have been, it would have driven me nuts if I would have kept trying to do the show with it and fiddling with that damn thing.
It wasn't working.
Davey's got to eventually go back to work. So he can't be sitting around twitching it up.
Yeah.
So where everybody just eat them across the studio?
Yeah, they're over here now. Those are done.
Yeah, they're done.
Those are donezo.
However, thank you to my youngest who bought those for me about 2 years ago. That's a long time for headphones in this business
for people who are working
all the time.
Yeah. Yep.
Anyway, I must have folded it up in my bag wrong or something like that. Anyway. Into hour two, Gresh and Keith. There
Julio
we go.
Jones.
Julio Jones. First round pick. Here's what I've come to realize. Isn't Julio Jones a luxury? When you think for New England. For New England, a luxury on the way that they're built. He would be a nice upgrade. It would be awesome to have him. But I keep coming back to, in the Patriots' mind, that would be a luxury. And they're not going to pay a first-round pick for, I think, what they would consider to be a luxury.
I don't necessarily think it's a luxury. I think it's a luxury for Kansas City or Tampa Bay or some of these other teams. Because right now, if I asked you, what is better, the Patriots' offense or their defense?
Their defense.
100% agreed.
No,
it's
no
definitely
doubt.
Their defense. And even though they made upgrades on offense, I like their tight ends a lot. I like their offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Question mark at quarterback. You know, is Cam going to be better? Or are they going to hand it off to Mac or whatever? Good running backs. The receivers, to me, are average. Nelson Agholor, Kendrick Bourne, and Jacoby Myers, and N'Keal Harry receiving core is very average.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason why it's not a luxury to me is without Julio Jones, I'm like, yeah, they could probably win 10 games and compete for a wild card spot with them. I'm like, ooh. Oh, look out, Bills. Like, with him, I think they could maybe even leapfrog a couple teams or separate themselves from teams like Cleveland and Tennessee.
And I don't think that's enough for this group in Gillette to make that move because of that. Because as you were saying that, I'm sitting here, if you think the Patriots are a 10-win team, how much does Julio add? A win?
Maybe a win, but I think you're also just way more difficult to defend. And I think come playoff time,
I would agree.
And like come playoff time, the whole puncher's chance thing. Like, all right, you're in the playoffs now, and you have Julio Jones in this offense. Then could they go on a little bit of a run? Could they, you know, it's not always the number one seed versus the number one seed in the Super Bowl every year. So now you come in and maybe you win the, maybe a win, the difference is winning the division. And then you get a, you know, a worse opponent in the first round of the playoffs. And I don't know, I just think you set yourself up to have a chance with somebody like Julio Jones. And by the way, it's not a one-year thing.
Right.
At least it shouldn't be. It's not a, hey, we got Brandon Cooks for a year, hopefully it does well, then we're going to trade him away or anything like that. Like, he's under contract for 3 years. I know he's in his 30s, but I think he'll be good for 3 years. So it's also an investment for a bit of the long term.
Now, the other part of this is this report is total rubbish. This is fake news, and it's not where it came from, one from CNN. Seriously, this is fake news. Because if the Falcons had a first-round pick for Julio Jones, why would they put it out there? Why would they?
Trading him. Don't they have to decide whether or not they want to trade him? Because
I think they kind of have, don't you think?
Well,
and I know they haven't come out and said, we're going to placate Julio or whatever. I think they're trying to play
Julio
the
cards. Wants out.
Julio wants out. I think they would like to maybe move on. Like, no one has come out and said, we're not trading Julio Jones. Like, even the people from the Packers are like, yeah, we're not trading Aaron.
Right. But I also think you didn't go with the young quarterback and sort of like a complete reset. You went with Kyle Pitts, who's very NFL ready.
And they middled it.
Ridley, Pitts, Julio Jones. You went out and signed Mike Davis, and you have Matt Ryan for another year. Like, part of them should be like, shouldn't we just run it back? We have a new coach. This is our best bet is probably with him rather than getting a draft pick. Like, what? So you're going to keep Matt Ryan, but then just swap out Julio for a draft pick? Like, I don't even know if that's the best business for them. So I wonder if that's part of the decision making.
Well,
process.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I assume that the Falcons would be willing to move on from the player because A, he's aging, and B, if we were looking at it from our side, we would have been like, yeah, you probably waited a year too late in terms of maximizing the value on him. The other part of this, too, if this, and maybe, here's where the shred of this report could be true, is that if the offer is a 2023 first-round pick, then the Falcons might be dangling that, putting it out there, hoping that someone gives them a pick next year. And that is the if that offer was for a 2023 pick. Because if you have a first, what's the, like, and you're willing to move on from the player.
Yeah, you think you would do
then it. Then what's the issue? And even if you, look, you got to wait, you know, formality, June 1st, all that kind of stuff. But to me, you know, it was like when all of a sudden the Watson news was out there. Or, you know, we hear that the, you know, oh, this team's moving up, right? This feels like draft stuff, doesn't it? Just in terms of the pick and the rumblings and some of the lack of information that could be out there.
I think also there's not that rush because it's not April and they're not getting a draft pick for this year. So it's, we can wait a little bit. And if the price goes up a little bit, like, I don't know if Julio Jones' price is going up or down right now as we just sit here at
the end
of May.
That's a great question.
You know?
Because I think some people in the league would look at him way differently than some other teams. Like, if you're in win now mode, you're going to view Julio very differently than if you're Jacksonville or Houston or someone like that.
What I mean is, like, June 1st, July 1st, like, his value doesn't change.
Or do you wait till the deadline and trade him mid-year? You run the risk of him getting injured. Yeah. I know that. But, that strategy.
I think you'd want him in sooner, but it's one of those where, all right, Atlanta's already not getting a pick for this year's draft. They're not doing that. They need to wait till Tuesday because the way the money is set up and all of that. And you just kind of float out there that it's a one, and then maybe you're waiting for another team to throw in a one and a three. I think that's what Steph Diggs went for when he went from Minnesota to Buffalo.
I think that was like a 4-5 and then a one. I think
more than a one.
Buffalo. Yeah. It was a one with two middle rounders, and I think one was a four because the Bills might not have had a third.
So to your point, maybe the price point
could have been a third, but they ended up going with a four and a five to kind of make it whole. Make us part of your new routine, WEEI.com and on the Odyssey app. Look, everything is changing. You're going to be going back out again. Make sure you are bringing us with you wherever you go and ask your smart speaker to play WEEI. We know we are about to get into the second round of the playoffs on Saturday. Joining us now, Pete Blackburn, who's with us on the Harbor One Hotline. Pete covers the NHL for Bally Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at Pete Blackburn. And Pete, what is the environment? Like, are we going to get old school Bruins environment Saturday night? And what do you make of fans coming back and how it is going to impact these deeper rounds of the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's going to be exciting. The fans haven't been in the building with that many numbers for a long time, and it's the playoffs. It's going to be exciting. You know, I'm a guy who thinks, you know, I think a lot of betting people will tell you that home ice advantage can be overrated in terms of just how a lot of people factor it into a series. But it plays into momentum, and it plays into you'd rather have it than not have it, I guess. But when I looked at these matchups that the Bruins were facing in the second round, you know, a lot of people were saying that they wanted the Islanders because they were going to get home ice. And, you know, I pushed back on that because I thought that the Penguins were the better matchup because they had the weakest link in the playoffs, which is Tristan Jarry. Would have loved to face that guy because he couldn't stop anything. But, it's obviously nice to have home ice in this second round series.
Yeah, I'm with you. I wanted Pittsburgh, too, just because of the goalie matchup. So with the Islanders, they used two goalies in that first matchup. How good are those guys? How close is the goaltending advantage or disadvantage, I guess you should say, with Tuukka Rask? And who do you think it's going to be for the Islanders?
Well, it's got to be Sorokin. Sorokin was really good for them, especially down the stretch, and I think that he was the biggest reason why they were able to sort of separate the gap with Pittsburgh. That was a close series. It was a hard-fought series most of the way. But where things really started to skew in the Islanders' favor was when Sorokin played really well and Jarry kept playing like trash. And it was a big, too big of a disparity for the Penguins to overcome. You know, I think that they do have good goaltending. They do have a good defense. Everybody knows that about the Islanders. But I think when you look at how they played in round one and heading into round two, they're going to be facing a much, much, much better goalie in Tuukka Rask than they did in round one, where they still kind of had not an adventure, but it took them six games to beat the Penguins. And so going up against the Bruins that has much better goaltending, or should have much better goaltending, might be a little bit scary if you're an Islanders fan.
Pete Blackburn of Bally Sports. He joins us on the Harbor One Hotline here with Gresh and Keefe on the WEEI Sports Radio Network at WEEI.com. We know, Pete, how the Bruins are different with Taylor Hall. Since maybe that trade deadline, how have the Islanders been different, if at all, in your opinion?
I don't think they've been able to put it together offensively like they would have liked. You know, Kyle Palmieri has had, you know, some contributions, but they certainly have been a different team. And they sort of limped into the playoffs, and they've missed Anders Lee for sure. And they're just not getting the offensive production that they would have hoped to get when they made that trade for Palmieri and Zajac. That's been a problem. And I think that might be a problem again. And I also think that it goes beyond that. Like, you look at Matt Barzal, he had a pretty quiet first round series. And I think you can make the argument that the Islanders' top line might be their weakest line right now. And that's going to be a massive, massive problem for them if that doesn't turn around in the second round.
Is there any part of the game where the Islanders are better than the Bruins? Because I know it feels like such a homer take, but I'm looking at it, I'm like, I think I like the Bruins almost in every kind of category.
Well, I think the Islanders have better depth. That's, you know, you look at what happened in the first round, even against the Caps. The Caps, for a good portion of that series, you could tell that they were better on the back end than the Bruins were. And I think that if you're going to expose the Bruins, it's going to have to be with that bottom six and beating that bottom six. And so that's why, again, that's why I think, you know, the Islanders, if they're going to have success, they need to have mitigate the Bruins' top six. They need to get their own top end contributors. And we know that they're going to roll four lines. They're going to get depth contributions. Their fourth line with Matt Martin and Cizikas and Clutterbuck is a really, really tough defensive grinding line to play against. That's a big impact line for them. So, you know, if they can use that line to mitigate a top six line for the Bruins and then turn it around and use their own to sort of make an impact, that's where the Islanders are going to have success.
Pete, you mentioned that fourth line. Lord knows 10 years ago, Bruins fans learned how a fourth line can impact multiple series. Does that Islanders fourth line have that kind of impact? And is it up to the Bruins to move the puck? I think Mike Riley was the one who was talking about, well, they can hit anybody if the puck's gone.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And I also think that that sort of logic applies to the Bruins. And I think we did see a bit of that in round one where, you know, they kind of threw the fourth line out there and it they got ran over a little bit, but they didn't. It was sort of a positive in the sense that they didn't give up. Like, you throw them out there and you say, hey, don't give up a goal. We don't care if you get run over. It doesn't matter. Don't give up anything, because then we're going to move on and we're going to get the matchups that we want with our top end contributors. So, you know, I think that's sort of a similar mentality for these guys where, you know, The Islanders' fourth line is going to have a more positive impact than the Bruins' fourth line, I believe. But they sort of approach it in the same way where they go out there and they try to give you as hard a time as possible just in how tough they play.
Cam Neely said he hasn't spoken with Tuukka Rask or David Krejci about their futures. Are those guys that you want back next year? And if so, what kind of price?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that you want Tuukka back and you want David Krejci. You know, before this season, I would have been leaning more towards letting Krejci walk because I thought that Charlie Coyle was going to be the 2C. Now we've seen the season that Charlie Coyle has had, and you're not so sure about that. And it's quite hard to replace a second line center on the market or whatever. Like, I think that your best option might be keeping David Krejci at a reduced price. And then, you know, the Tuukka Rask thing, everybody wants to jump on the Swayman bandwagon and move on and sort of look towards the future. But I think you look at what just happened to the Penguins and you look at what just happened to the Philadelphia Flyers this season. Don't be so quick to move on and put all your eggs in one basket when it comes to goaltending, because, you know, if something goes wrong there, if you don't have goaltending, you're screwed. And I think that when you're the Bruins, the most ideal situation here might be trying to get Tuukka Rask on a 1 or 2 year deal to transition into this Swayman era. And honestly, it doesn't matter how much you pay him as long as it's in the ballpark. You're obviously not going to pay him more money. If you pay him in the ballpark of what you're paying him right now, you're going to lose Halak's money off the books. Swayman's on an ELC. So that combined number is not going to be super high, and you're going to be able to construct your team the way that you want to. So I think that you try to keep Tuukka as an insurance policy at minimum, while maybe giving Swayman a bigger role in transitioning him to be the guy moving forward.
Pete Blackburn of Bally Sports here with Gresh and Keefe on the WEEI Sports Radio Network. Give Pete a follow on Twitter at Pete Blackburn, and you can find him twitch.tv/Pete Blackburn. Leo Komarov is a guy who's been able to sort of poke that Marshawn bear a little bit in the past. You get some fans in there as well, hooping it up a little bit. Do we have something to worry about or at least keep an eye on, Pete?
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that kind of can be greasy and things like that. But, you know, they also had Tom Wilson last series, and that didn't end up being a huge, huge factor. So, you know, I'm not overly concerned with the idea of Leo Komarov getting under the Bruins skin. You know, this is a team that's been there plenty of times. And, you know, I'd like to see Marchand kind of keep it together himself a little bit more. We saw him be pretty stupid a few too many times in round one. Like, you want to see him rein it in and pick his spots a little bit more. But, you know, on that note, like, if the Bruins can get on the power play via Komarov's stupidness or greasiness or whatever you want to call it, and anybody else on the Islanders for that matter, if they want to try to push that button and put the Bruins on the power play, that could be a huge advantage because the Bruins have the better power play in this series for sure.
I feel like in every good series, there's always a guy or two on the other side that you end up hating, and sometimes it's predictable, sometimes it's not, and maybe you already said who it would be, but do you have a guess on, you know, by the time we get to game 3 or 4, a guy that Bruins fans are going to be the most annoyed with?
Yeah, it's probably going to be somebody on that fourth line, or it's going to be Pageau, just because Pageau always, you know, kind of kills the Bruins. So, you know, it could be for different reasons there, but it's probably the most likely candidate for Komarov or Matt Martin, Casey Sudeikis, Cal Clutterbuck. You know, I don't think Matt Martin would be the guy, just because a lot of people around here like Matt Martin.
Right.
They're like a guy they look at Matt Martin, they're like, ah, that would be a guy that I'd love on the Bruins, big, tough Bruins guy. So, you know, it's probably going to be one of those guys just based off of kind of how physical they are and how they like to get in your face.
Pete, quickly, do you think Pasta is back given the way he played toward the end of the Capitals series?
Yeah, I mean, he's a very streaky playoff performer. And, you know, when he disappears, it's tough. But, you know, I do think that the top two lines kept getting better as that series went on. And there's reason to be confident that they're going to be able to do it again. You know, obviously the Islanders have one of the best shutdown pairs in the league. But the Bruins had success against them for the most part in the regular season in terms of driving play. So, you know, I think that it's going to be a challenge for sure. Barry Trotz has a good defensive system, and this is a pretty good defensive team. But the Bruins have better top end talent, so I'm not worried about Pasternak.
Pete Blackburn of Bally Sports breaking down the NHL with us. You can catch his brunch podcast with DJ Bean. Follow Pete on Twitter at Pete Blackburn. Thank you, friend. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely.
There goes Pete. And the whole Pasta piece is, for me anyway,
I felt a lot better.
Absolutely. I'm like at the end of that series, you started to think, oh, this guy might actually start putting some pucks in the back of the net again. And Pete does make a good point that the guy is streaky in the playoffs and a nice streak of six games here against the Islanders. I'll take it. Sign up right now.
Yeah, no, you seriously will. And so, again, the goaltending advantage is still in favor of the Bruins, but it's a lot closer than it was against Washington or it would have been against Pittsburgh. And so to Pete's point, all right, they got a little bit more depth. And so that's where you go, all right, if they're third and fourth line, and let's face it, as good as the fourth line has been for the Bruins, there are games where, you know, Cassidy just kind of keeps them on the bench for like a 10-minute stretch. I'm like, all right, you guys just aren't going out there. And so if it comes down to the top two lines, maybe the power play and your goaltending,
the Bruins have a big advantage.
The Bruins for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I know there are some of the, again, the hockey hardos out there who are, you know, all over the various social media channels with the whole, is it going to be so easy? You're just putting sugar and spice on this. I think the difference is if you take the Bruins season as a whole, okay, I can understand that. There's no way as a Bruin fan you cannot have adjusted your expectations given what we've seen post-trade deadline and now here in this postseason. It's impossible to not get wrapped up in how consistent they've gotten, how Taylor Hall has put life into that second line, and David Krejci looks like a completely different guy from the first part of the year.
I mean, if you're going to redo your second line, your fourth line, your second pair defensively, and then, oh, by the way, Tuukka missed a stretch of games in there too. And as much as we like Swayman, you saw Swayman a little bit. I know Halak missed it sometime. Then he came in at the end. Vladar started a bunch of games. So it's like, all right, none of that matters. Tuukka's back. The defensemen, for the most part, are healthy. I don't know if you'll ever get Kevin Miller back full go, but for the most part, is healthy. And at the very least, if you're going to have McAvoy and Riley and Carlo and Grizzlick, all right, you can figure out the other guys if need be. But no, they're in a better spot now than they were, obviously, the first 3 months of the year.
And what's interesting is, you know, when the Bruins had that cup run in 11, we were all, everybody was into the fourth line, right? Because it was the hard workers, the grinders, you know, that kind of deal. And now we sit here like some 10 years later and it's, well, the Islanders' fourth line. And I think it's only because 10 years ago we realized how a fourth line, even if they don't play a ton, they can have a big impact on a series, but yet I'm not worried about it because I do think the Bruins have that ability to overcome. I mean, it's almost the dual side of the brain, right? Like, okay, I know it can matter, but why am I not worried about it in this
series? Well, I think the big difference is 10 years ago under Claude Julien, the fourth line was more important because they were winning 1-0 and they were winning 2-1.
So system related more than anything.
Yeah, and I think, all right, so whether it was an energy or just, hey, you know, don't allow a goal and be a pest and kind of get in everybody's way. Whereas now, if the fourth line's not great, okay, you're still going to score 3 or 4 goals. Like if things are going well, Pasternak's going to score, Marchand's going to score, Taylor Hall's going to, you're like, the room for the margin of error is better now than it was then.
I would agree with you. And Scheim has got the old Tuukka sweater rolling today.
Look at Sharp.
It's a little tighter than we saw last time he wore it.
A little tighter. No, he looks great.
What are you talking about?
Flying Scheim's gained weight.
Yeah, that's insane. He looks great.
I've gained weight in the last, like, week. What are we doing?
Grained weight?
What are you? What are you, a cow? Yeah, on the field, graining weight?
He looks great. The sweat, are you kidding me? That's nice.
No, the sweater looks good. I'm not saying that he, I'm just saying that it looked like there was one.
He filled it out from last week.
Nah, but because the strings
It doesn't look like he tied it up in the front.
Gresh is just upset because his $150 headphones he had to huck across the room earlier today.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, just straight up heated him across the studio.
Yeah, he's lashing out at other people.
Like, it's my fault. I tried to help fix them.
You did.
Well, they were unfixable. Yet it was weird because they lay down flat. Like, they did things that would show that the headphones aren't broken. Yet,
well,
I had an earwood going on. By the way, go to @Gresh Keef on Twitter, and you can see the logo that was whipped together. And by the way, Eamon down in the digital there, the guy
Twitch
who's
master.
Running the Twitch master,
yeah.
He put out a little video yesterday that I really only left for him at the end of a sports book video that I shot the other day.
Yeah, he made that public.
And he put that out there publicly, my ass is sublime, let's put it that way. Go to that video and check it out.
That's one way to describe it.
Mm-hmm. Here is Shine with Trending.
Like the show? Of course you do. Tell a friend about Gresh and Keefe on WEEI.
Biggest takeaway for me, initial reaction was he was a little smaller than I expected. He is 6'2 and a half, and just a little bit taller measured is Jarrett Stidham, but it looked like Stidham was either wearing a giant thick helmet or had huge cleats on, because Little Mac looked like a Little Mac, not a Big Mac, and he also needs some filling out up at the top, but aside from all that, we've seen multiple quarterbacks of relatively diminutive stature have great success. And I really like the way that Mac Jones threw the ball in terms of accuracy.
When did Mac Jones become a 5'7" quarterback?
Just a little bit of a
pocket?
Guy. Well, you know what it was? We saw him standing next to Devontae Smith a lot on the sidelines. And you're like, oh, he's big. He's not. He's a little guy. He's out of shape. He's a little doughy. But he's got a good arm. So they like him.
Out of shape. He's a little
have you
rough.
Seen him?
Well, he's not, Hulk Hogan, but
you
out of
diet.
Shape, though.
You're a pro athlete. You'd be eating cookies every night.
Like, out of shape means you can't, pass the run test and stuff like
you're
that.
You're taking
I
down 10 chocolate chip cookies, you put them in the fridge, and then the next thing you know, they all disappear?
Yeah.
Did they do the run test? Did he pass the run test?
Oh, no, I'm just saying is that, just by, if we looked at Brady and said, oh, guy's out of shape, and all that, just in terms of the physical stature, he didn't get made fun of until he got drafted, and then the photo got out there.
Yeah, right. But there's the Mac Jones photo of him, with the cigar, and he looks like any one of us with his shirt off.
I just don't think you have to you don't have to look like, in the words of the great Dusty Rhodes, the way the athlete of the day is supposed to look to necessarily either compete in the NFL or, they don't look like Hulk Hogan. And they look great with his shirt on.
No, I don't care that he's shorter than advertised. That doesn't really matter to me.
His body has not developed yet. I think we could say that just in terms of the whole three hots and a cot getting him in there. However, one of the stories, ESPN.com, quarterback Jones's energy and swag. Winning Patriots veterans over.
How about that? They're just setting you up for him taking over the job, I guess.
Kendrick Bourne, quote,
this guy just got here too. We're taking his word for it? What'd Kendrick say?
He has a swag to him that I didn't know he had at first. He's out there confident, and that is what you need in a quarterback. Good energy, awesome guy, comes to work. You can just feel his energy and leadership already.
So what I'll say is, and I don't know Kendrick Bourne, as far as, is this somebody that you can completely trust with his assessment, or is he just talking up a teammate? We don't know. We don't know Kendrick Bourne at all. But
that's right.
What I will say is in 2 years, no one has ever said that about Jarrett Stidham. Ever. Not even Jarrett Stidham.
That's an interesting point.
They never said that about Jarrett Stidham.
I thought you were going the cam route.
No,
and
no,
instead,
put him aside.
You're right.
Mac Jones has already surpassed Jarrett Stidham in the minds of teammates. Already.
Hunter Henry. Mac's doing a great job. We're just all going through it together. Him being even new to the atmosphere of this next level, good to have him here, and we're all excited for him. That sounded Belichick.
That's way more just generic, because when we had different Patriots on over the last couple of years, and we would ask them about Jarrett Stidham or N'Keal Harry, they would fall back on the, works hard. Guys out there. You're like, what? Whereas you talk about confidence level and swag and stuff like that,
that's
a little bit different. And for a guy who is a rookie and just got here, he's been here 2 days and he has all that. So again, if Kendrick Bourne, I don't know if Kendrick Bourne says that about everybody. I don't know if there's they also asked him about Brian Hoyer. He's blown away by how good Brian Hoyer was.
That's right.
I have no idea on that front, but still, some of those kind of hot phrases you didn't hear about the other guys.
Well, here. and a part of the Mac Jones package is the intangibles, right? Like, yeah. it's the he may not look great with his shirt off, he may not be the biggest guy in the pocket, but he delivers the ball and guys believe in him. And that's, it's funny because that is something that we worried about with Cam Newton, right? Like, it's the whole,
yeah.
oh, Bill, you're rolling this guy back out here again. And it didn't feel like, anyway, Cam lost the confidence of the people around him. And there is something to that because, look, there are a lot of guys in a lot of position groups on the New England Patriots that are going to be competing for jobs. And then there are those veterans who know they're going to be here and they're going to look at the world a little differently. And they'll look at that position a little differently. And I think with Cam, it is the, well, he's a legend. So even if he slipped, I'm not going to maybe say it out of deference to a guy who was a former MVP. Whereas with a rookie, you might look at him and just be like, and to your point with Stidham, like no one has said that in the 3 years around Jared Stidham.
No, and there's really nothing to gain, as you say, in these guys. Like the guys that they're just meeting, there are things you can say about them that are just like the generic nice thing to say. Like, oh, he works hard and, you know, he's putting in the work.
We're all settling like, in, right? Yeah, like that kind of generality.
That guy, like, he seems like he's trying to get better, which is always a classic one because it means, well, right now they're not very good. But yeah, with Cam, sort of, I put him in a different category than that. And but it's because you remember one of the reports out there. It might have been Greg Bedard. I forget who it was last year. And it came out that one of the reasons they didn't go to Stidham, and this was debated. I don't know if everybody agreed with it, but they said one of the reasons they didn't go to Stidham last year, even the last couple of games, is because the teammates didn't. They weren't sold on him, and it would have been like, really, coach, like you're going to this guy. Not that I think that Belichick was really at a loss of them completely questioning his decision, but as bad as Cam was, they knew that Jared Stidham wasn't the answer. Whereas already right now, if you have some guys that like Mac Jones and Cam Newton struggles, it maybe not that crazy of a concept to them to then go to the rookie who they are developing this good relationship with and they think that is a pretty good player.
Matt Patricia.
Yeah. Roaming
around on the field
What's he doing? Trying to ruin the defense?
So Matt Patricia, according to reports, out there in the normal windbreaker, probably a 4X by now.
Fact.
That's not fair, but yeah.
As someone who wears larger clothing, I can point out when other people wear larger clothing. And Matt Patricia's always been very nice to me, and I'm sure we'd probably kill a pizza buffet or two.
I would imagine that wouldn't stand a chance.
Apparently, Matt Patricia, coaching, but more in that like standing beside Belichick role. So is he the new Big Earn?
Or is he the new Casario? Is he more in that? Because Casario, for a player personnel guy, would be on the field a lot.
He would, but he didn't go around to different position groups necessarily. He was like kind of, so apparently Patricia was sort of this roaming coach. Because you got to remember, right? Bill is still working the whole Fugazi buyouts that you have in these contracts now. Like remember with Brett Bielema, right?
Bring
in Bielema. They paid him like $200,000 or whatever it was. Uh-huh. And Arkansas was paying the rest. So I don't know if he can necessarily like coach a position group per se, but according to the reports, he was kind of roaming around all over the place, pencil in ear, writing stuff down.
Obviously, he's got the pencil in his ear. Good, take notes.
Got to have an extra for stuff. Bill, just in case Bill snaps or something like that, or he gets upset or whatever.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
what do you make of this role with Matt Patricia? Because it seems to be very undefined, but he's been involved in the draft. He's on the field. He's walking around near these position groups, yelling stuff out. Like he's just roaming the earth.
It's nepotism is what it is. I mean,
is he the fifth Belichick kid
basically,
or something? Or fourth kid?
Like where nobody else was going to hire him. Like he made Detroit worse. But think about that for a second. He made the Detroit Lions worse.
Mm.
Nobody wanted him. The Patriots don't even really want him. He's not their defensive coordinator. He's not like
I don't think on the coaching staff. I think he's like technically like a front office guy.
Yeah, it's like an undefined role or whatever it is, and it's just because Bill loves him. And I'm not going to freak out about it because Bill is still here. But if Bill moves on in a few years and the Crafts are just like, hey, we have Patricia and McDaniels, and these guys are like, then I'll freak out. I'll be like, all right, you don't want these guys running your club. But Bill loves them so much, and you're like, all right, I guess.
But that's the thing. Is he the new Patricia? Is he the new Caserio? Or is he in that Ernie role where you're in the bunker breaking down all the tape and sort of handing it to Bill?
We may not know until like the preseason rolls around and you see on game day, like, where is he? Because the cameras will find him.
Right.
Like, he'll be does he have a headset talking to Bill up in the booth? Is he possibly on the sideline? Like, I don't really know what to make of it. But if he's involved, like, I don't know what's worse, him involved in player personnel or him involved in coaching. I don't know. He had some good defenses when he was here, but the talent was also off the charts. And then his last game as a coach, he allowed 51 points to a backup quarterback.
Well, and Brian Flores stepped in, and they got more aggressive. And that's the
I like it better.
Well, I do too, and I think they do too, as evidenced by some of the veterans that they brought back. But I wonder if he's more behind the scenes again.
Because
if you're Patricia, it's like, I'd like to keep collecting these big checks from the Ford family. Sure. So let me just go. I'll take Ernie's office, right? We'll just fumigate it. Put me in there. See you later. Mm-hmm. And then Aguilar and Kendrick Bourne taking what were described as number one level reps at wide receiver. I don't think that's any surprise at all, just from the standpoint of you got two new tight ends and two new wide receivers to work in, and right now during these OTAs, get them a ton of reps.
Definitely. And based on what they paid Aguilar, they really think he's a number one wide receiver. And Kendrick Bourne, who I don't know if he was ever even the third wide receiver. I guess maybe due to some injuries last year, he kind of got elevated into that role. But I think it's just going to be another motivational thing for Jacoby Myers, who at the beginning of last year was kind of, you know, really low on the depth chart.
Right.
And then when he was given a chance, he was actually one of the few guys that seemed like he had a bit of a rapport with Cam Newton. And I wouldn't be surprised if he ended up passing those guys at some point.
And Myers apparently was having some brain farts here during. But what that makes me wonder is how much of this offense or what level of installation is going on right now
that
is causing a guy like that to sort of make those mental mistakes. Don't forget, Sunday night right here on WEEI, it is the Gresh Show on CBS Sports Radio. Yep, that's right. I will be talking to no one the day before a holiday. So I'll try to get somebody all whipped up from, you know, Bumble Fart, Arkansas or whatever.
I know the gut reaction and the impact that I have on the national public.
Speaking of that, you know, we kind of blew by Wednesday night's Red Sox game and the whole rain delay, and apparently they restarted that game around midnight, and there were like 12 people in the ballpark, but you heard them all. This got by us. We give the OMFers credit. You got to hear this audio next.
Wherever you're working from, Gresh and Keefe go where you do. Download the Odyssey app or ask your smart speaker to play WEEI.
Well, it's raining, and it's 7-4 Red Sox through six complete innings, and we're going to be here a while, we think, so we'll send it back to Brian in the studio.
Well, and that led to, I do believe, Brian Barrett doing 3 hours of Sox talk, and then they started that game back up again around midnight, and Rich,
that's right,
that is where the fun begins, and we'd like to thank Tyler and the OMFers for unearthing this, but this is pretty good stuff. So they get this game going again. Everybody's pretty much asleep, right?
Yeah, I missed this one. I'll be honest with you guys.
Me too.
I did not catch this one live.
And apparently the players, some took a nap. Yeah. Now they got those, like,
late night,
you know, those bunks in there, like you're in a Japanese hotel or something, a little sleep chamber deal.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So they wake the boys up. Here we go. All right. Seventh inning.
Play ball.
Let's get rolling, right? There's about 100 drunk fans in the stands. Oh. Now, imagine, right?
Yeah.
And this is not cranking on fans, but imagine who is going to be left after a 3-hour rain delay in a ballpark in the middle of a pandemic with a shrunken crowd to begin with.
Well, let me tell you this. Where else can you go? A lot of things are closed, especially home. In Boston late at night. Well, hold on. Maybe you don't want to go home. Maybe you're dealing with something. Maybe
home's bad.
This is my night to escape. I get to go out. It's the oldest ballpark in the country.
I didn't know that.
It's a monument, for God's sakes. A landmark.
Yes, it is.
So maybe it's their first time at Fenway. They're like, I'm not going to leave until I see the final of this ball game.
Well,
I'm going to see a winner and a loser before I leave.
And, some people were sitting right near the Nesson microphones. And, you know, when Pablo Sandoval comes up, you know, some stuff's going to go sideways. This is what it sounded like on Nesson.
Way back in the first inning, a little after 7 o'clock, he tripled and drove in a run.
I got a babysitter till 1.
Albies has also struck out and flied out. So this year, where will he finish in that category? He may blow right by that.
The
0-2, and that'll miss outside.
Dave O'Brien, consummate professional.
Yeah, there's a ball outside.
That's a great line. I've only got a babysitter till 1.
Till 1.
That's a good one.
Yep.
So it continued, and Sandoval still at the dish. This is what it sounded like on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network, and I got to say, Will Fleming's the best.
Mm-hmm. The leadoff man retired. Here's Pablo Sandoval, who's fouled a third, struck out, and popped a third, and even the group left here booing him.
I love it.
Red Sox fans have long memories.
Sometimes too long, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's time to let it go. I mean, it was a bad signing, didn't work out, but...
Hey, Pablo, do you have an Indy or an Audi?
Call strike. You know, it's trouble when you have about 100 people in the seats. So they know where the effects microphone is.
Oh, that's great. I'm guessing any.
Not anymore. It's
visible. Outside. 1-1.
Oh, it's well done, Joe.
That is fair. Even Castiglione had to laugh at that.
Yeah, right. At this point, let me come on. But he says, ease up on Pablo. I disagree. Guy was a bum.
Hey, Pablo, do you have an innie or an outie?
Not only is it an innie, it's like the kind of innie
all
that
the way
like innie. Crumbs are caught after you're eating a pizza.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Like, what was the one on Peter Griffin? Oh, a cat in a Parliament's and a ColecoVision. This is going to be a fun weekend. Like,
yeah.
He would be one of that would be Pablo Sandoval.
It's probably a mess.
You would think
it's
so.
It's a mess in there. It stinks.
Getting lint out of that thing.
It stinks.
There's no way he uses a tweezer,
no,
right?
He doesn't clean it properly.
He's just sticking his finger in there and scooping that lint out. Too, Shime, right?
It's visible.
Yeah, just like your finger in the ranch, just like that.
That's right. Yeah,
come on.
So you lick your finger after you stick it in your belly button? Is that what you're saying?
Definitely.
That's right. You forgot about that part.
Get a nice hairball going, like I'm your pet cat.
Yeah. No, my cat killed a squirrel, man.
That's
I'm telling
the grossest
you.
Thing.
That's a new hipster thing. They're putting in the oat milk in the iced coffee, the little belly button.
Oat milk.
That's so gross.
Does oat have a nipple? How can it have milk?
I'm more grossed out by that than any
thinking of Shime
thing we've talked about. Just anybody digging into their belly button.
What?
Disgusting.
Really?
Yes, it's gross. It's gross.
Well, do you have an outie? Are you being an innie? Are you being like an innie elitist?
I'm being an innie elitist.
Wow, what a jerk.
No, just gross. Somebody, and then licking your fingers? Ugh.
It's called a joke. We're not actually doing it.
I know, but my mind takes me there.
You're there now, right?
See it. I'm not accusing you of doing that, Shime. I'm just saying somebody out there is like, yeah, what's the problem? I'll tell you what the problem is. Now I'm a little sick.
It's just like people who pick at stoplights, right?
Yeah.
Look over and somebody's knuckle deep, you know? Yeah. I mean, again.
I'm guessing any.
We'll take it a stab.
I think the funniest.
Will Joyce on Wednesday, by the way.
I think the funniest part of that is that it broke up Castiglione because Castiglione is a lot like Dave O'Brien in a way.
Very professional.
Let me power through it.
Yeah,
but
after a 3-hour regular,
that's a real belly laugh.
Oh, yeah. The guys have been at the park probably 12 hours. You get a little slappy at that point. Like, all of a sudden, everything's funny.
I mean, that is great.
And that's just good. See, right there, that is good heckling. That is a good example of heckling.
Tremendous heckling.
Tonight for Kyrie Irving, stuff like that. Stuff like that is what makes people laugh. It could also maybe, you know, bother Kyrie a little bit. But you're not crossing the line. You're not going to get thrown out of the building or lose your job or anything like that. That's the stuff we need. We need that guy who was at Fenway the other night to be at the Garden tonight.
401, my wife is pregnant and the transformation of her belly button has me amazed.
Yeah, it's a game changer. Yep. See, that's what I was saying with Pablo. Like, it probably started as an innie, then was an outie, and then came back to being an innie again.
A big innie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A cavernous innie.
Correct.
With some of his size. Top of the hour. Interesting. We're into heckling. What is it going to sound like Friday and Sunday at the Garden for Kyrie Irving? We'll get into that next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.